The Michael Savage Show contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised.
And now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation. Here is Michael Savage.
It's the Savage Nation. Just setting the mood with sitar music. Don't panic. All right, so here's the shot. I live in a very liberal area. Most of the people are drugged, either on Prozac-related compounds, cocaine, marijuana, crank. It's hard to say. They're all white middle-class liberals, the type that still drive around with Obama-Biden bumper stickers and think that they're doing just swell. So I'll give you an example of the kind of things you put up with in liberal communities. Here's an article in a local newspaper. Says, sea lions swarming long-abandoned seal rocks. It says they can hear the sea lions off seal rocks on Ocean Beach, and they're saying, I've never seen mass clumps of sea lions like this. Now, normally, that would be a good thing, that there's an awful lot of sea lions. But because liberals believe in, well, we don't know what they believe in. I think they believe in global warming. And, of course, this should be something good that there's a lot of sea lions, right, to a lib? They're turning it into something bad because the sea lions are making a lot of noise, disturbing their seances. Last night I go into a restaurant, little fish joint. I wanted to just slip in, slip out, have a piece of fish, an overpriced piece of garbage, $16.95 for a sliver of ahi, mahi, wahi, dahi, dohi. You know, everything's cutesy-wootsy. They rip you off in the Bay Area, wherever you go on food, the people take it because they're schmucks and they don't answer back. So the young lady serving me looked like a nice kid. I try to talk to people. They don't know who I am naturally because on radio, no one knows who you are. And I ask you this, I ask you that. So I said, well, what are you doing? You go to school? Yes, I'm going to a junior college. I said, what do you hope to do? She said, well, I want to go on and get an MSW. I said, that's nice. And what are you going to do with that? She says, well, I want to teach people how to work the system. I said, oh, really? I said, but the system's broke. There's nothing left to work. She says, well, there's plenty left to work, and I want to show people how to work the system. Classic left-wing Marin County brat raised by hippie, pot-smoking left-wing bums who work the system their whole life, teaching this child to work the system when there's no system left because it's been milked dry. So I said, you're working a very hard job here, aren't you? You're not working the system. You're working two jobs. Why would you teach someone how to work the system who doesn't want to work at all? She says to me, well, that's an interesting way to look at it, and she walks away in a huff. Nobody confronts these people with reality. Liberals and their children don't know what world they're living in. They haven't any idea what world they're living in. So, for example, there's another story. Here's another story. Three stupid morons from the University of California at Berkeley, which is a great school in some science departments, but make no mistake about it, by and large, they've turned it into mush. They go hiking and walk over into Iran, and they get imprisoned in Iran. You read the story of who these jerks are, and you say it's impossible to believe that a person in their 20s can grow up and still have these mental attitudes. Each one of these kids, 20-year-olds, who were hiking and got walked into Iran, all went to the University of California at Berkeley. They all majored either in Middle Eastern studies or some kind of touchy-feely something or other. Now, these backpackers saying that they got lost while hiking in a mountainous region where the Iran-Iraq border is not clearly marked. I don't actually know what they were doing there. I suspect they could be CIA. I really don't know. I don't think anybody in their right mind, even liberals, would hike into Iran knowingly. But let's assume that we read the story on its face value. The three Americans, freelance journalist, somebody or other, his girlfriend, Sarah and his friend Joshua were hiking in a region of Iraq's northern Kurdish region, blah, 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 blah. And they walked over into Iran and they got arrested. Okay? But you look at their background and you look at these idiots and the kind of things they studied at the University of California at Berkeley, and you wonder, how in the world can these people go through an entire school, an entire college, and call themselves a freelance reporter and photographer? And how can they go there and not understand what might happen to them? How is it possible that people can grow up and not understand the danger they would be in going to Iran? Unless they're spies, I really don't know. But that's an example of the kind of stuff that you have to put up with in a liberal area, which is the incessant propaganda and the incessant stupidity, which is, of course, why I live here. Now, that raises another question, which is children and whether they're worth raising. Now, the reason I say that is because a new article came out from the government media complex, posted by the Associated Press. But as you well know, nothing gets posted by the Associated Press that doesn't first go through Rahm Emanuel's hands and, of course, the guy with the skinny mustache who looks like he ran the UJA in New York, whoever he is. Whatever. What's his name? Why do I always forget him? Those two sneaks from Chicago. What? Yeah, Axelrod, with the pencil mustache. And, of course, they're trying to tell you that children aren't worth it. Middle-income family spends $221,000 to raise a baby. It says there's no secret raising children, but how about nearly $250,000? Is that expensive? Now, I think it's low by 50%, by the way. A government report, meaning an Obama report, released today, says a middle-income family with a child born last year will spend $221,000 raising their child through age 17. That's off by at least $250,000. Now, it leads you to ask, is a child worth it? Because as you well know, the illegal aliens are the only ones who the Obamas want to have children. And the reason the Obamaites want more and more illegal aliens to bring more and more babies here and make them into instant citizens is that they're more malleable than an American-born child. Because if a child doesn't speak the language, they will do exactly what you want them to do. They're glad to collect a government check. They're glad to go to a government school. They'd be glad to go to a government health care center, just as they did in their native Nicaragua, El Salvador, or Mexico. You understand why the Obamaites want more and more illegal aliens from these countries? And so it brings up a question that is worth asking anyway. Are children worth it? Now, let's think back to when people had large families. Now, I'm not talking about the crack hoes who have large families in order to get more welfare. I'm not talking about illegal aliens who have as many children as they can because every one of them becomes an instant citizen owing to the stupidity of the American people who permit this nonsense to go on. I am talking about normal, healthy, sane, married families of any race in this country and why they have children. What's the reason for having children? In the original times, the old times rather, when people were agricultural, the children worked on the farm. That's, by the way, why they were given long school vacations, in case you don't know it. Children were given summer vacations because it was too hot to go to school, and the children were needed around the farm. Consequently, the children worked during the summers. They didn't stay home and smoke marijuana or whatever the children are doing today. So now you have families with idlers sitting around who have nothing to do, and you have the strange situation where parents have to entertain children. Their lives aren't busy enough. But in other words, when a family had 6 to 8 children, hundreds of years ago, 100 years ago, 200 years ago, the children were useful to the parents. They were put to work. The girls churned butter. The girls knitted flags and clothing. Whatever else the girls did, the boys went out in the fields or they went hunting, and they put meat on the table. But what good are children now? They only cost you money. And so I ask you, are children worth it? And if so, why? Because they're expensive. When you read that most single-parent households in the U.S. make less than $57,000 and are expected to spend about 7% less on child-rearing costs compared to two-parent households, you have to ask yourself what's going on. And as you would understand, costs of raising a child are highest in the urban Northeast. Of course, everything's better in the urban Northeast because that's Kennedy country. And lowest in the urban South and rural areas, fill in the blanks, meaning where dumb Christians live. Of course, the AP didn't write that, but that's the implication. It's where the toothless Christians live, is in the urban South and rural areas. It's easier to raise a child, less money to raise. But in the intelligent areas of Massachusetts, particularly around Chappaquiddick, Massachusetts, it's very expensive to raise a child. One of the largest changes over time has been the increase in costs related to care for young children. Now, you notice this AP article is emphasizing the cost of care for young children, because the AP article came from, it's no longer the Associated Press, it's the Associated Obama Press, the AOP. What they're trying to do is tell you that after we get universal health care, that is socialized medicine, we're going to need then universal child care provided for by the communist government of Obama. And then they interview a woman, a mother of three, Rabin Andrews of St. Louis, who said the government figures sounded right to her. "Well, that's not half of a joke," the 42-year-old public school teacher. "I still have to put the little buggers through college." Now, of course, I don't know if you know the word bugger. Is it actually a derogatory phrase? It shows you how demented the society has become that people would refer their children in such a derogatory manner. But we'll put that aside. The question again is, are children worth it? And why are they worth it? Why do you think it is worth sacrificing to spend money on a child when you can spend it, for example, on a vacation at the beach? Think of all the beautiful clothing you could buy for yourself. Think if you could live like they do in West Los Angeles, where everyone is a star behind their car. Everyone drives around making believe that you think that they think that you think that they think, etc., and everyone's a star behind their car. But think of the beautiful car you could buy instead of raising your child. Think of the extraordinary cost of sending a child to college. I remember when I had very little money and I was struggling, I used to see people driving around in Porsches with bibs on them in the 80s. And I said, "God, that's a beautiful car." I had to save money to send my children through college. I did so. I did want the car. I wouldn't lie to you. If I wanted a brown Porsche with a bib. I look back now and think how stupid that was. But the fact of the matter is, you have to sacrifice to raise a child. It's very expensive and very costly. And what is the reason for raising a child? So if you want to talk about this, you can call me, because I think this is an essentially good question. Are children worth it? Why or why not? I happen to know a very wealthy man, a very nice man, who does not have children, and he regrets not having had children. He's had a very interesting life, a very good life. He gives money away. Very nice man, but he has no children. And he would like to have had children, but he hasn't had children. Do you regret not having had children? Looking back, do you wish that you had suppressed some of your id and instead spent the money on a child instead of on your selfish self? Or the other side of the coin, let's assume you have children or have had children. Are you glad that you sacrificed for them, even though you have less now than you might have had? This is the one and only Savage Nation. I am the heavyweight championship holder of talk radio. I'll be right back. Savage.
Throw mama from the train, a kiss, a kiss. Wave mama from the train, a goodbye.
Throw mama from the train, never mind a kiss, a kiss. Welcome back to the Savage Nation.
Throw mama from the train.
Middle income family spends $221,000 to raise baby. I'm asking you, are children worth it? Why or why not?
Don't cry, my
baby. I mean, think of all the trips you can take, all the nice shoes and ties. Think of all the fun you could have going to resorts. Think of all the meals you could have instead of children. I mean, are they worth it? You don't need them to pick the corn crop. What do you need them for? Why do you have children? What's the purpose of it? I mean, I'll give you my personal opinion is, yes, it's worth it. That without children, there's no reason to live, to be honest with you. I mean, to me, that's the whole continuum. And I suppose that grandchildren would be wonderful. I don't have grandchildren. I hope I do one day. But the fact of the matter is, that's the whole chain. It's an inherent, encoded desire in mankind. I don't care what the race is. I don't care what the culture is. We know that the ethnic culture, so to speak, or let us say other societies outside of America, place a greater emphasis on family than we do. We know that white people are dying around the world because they have given over to the id and the principle of pleasure rather than the principle of sacrifice, and they would rather have fun than have children. We know that. We know that the birth rates in most Western European nations are unsupportable. They're negative ones. and that the immigrants are going to take over Europe. Within 50 years, there will be probably the Europe will be Muslim, as certainly England. England is not reproducing. They're too busy getting drunk, puking, and having orgasms or looking for one. England is dead. I think the lowest birth rate that I read about recently was in, believe it or not, Serbia. Ireland had a very low birth rate. And the U.S., if you were to extrapolate out Caucasians from other ethnic groups, it would be a negative one birth rate. The white people are not reproducing. They're too busy having a good time. All you got to do is look at the clubs, and you'll understand what happened to America. Take a look. You go into a city like San Francisco, and you take a look at the stores. There are virtually no baby stores. There are pet stores with clothing for pets. Now, I love my dog, but a dog was originally in a household to entertain children. All right, people now, you hear them talking about their dogs or cats the way they talk used to talk about their children. When I grew up, the women in the Bronx would push a stroller, and they would look at each other's baby and coo over each other's baby and inquire about each other's baby and talk about each other's baby and love each other's baby and help each other over their baby. Today they talk about their dogs and cats. So that's the future of America. The nation's gone to the dogs. But the question is, for those of you who don't see it that way, who have children or having children or going to have children, why are you doing so? What is the reason that you think it's worth having children? Let's start on the West Coast. Tom in Los Angeles on KGIL. Go ahead, please. Your thoughts on children. Have you gone from kids to IDS in one generation?
No. Good afternoon, Dr. Savage. And this question, I think, is why your program is the best because of the various topics in which you direct the show. I am single, don't have any children, but I do believe that things are less family-centered in this country, and I think that the reason why people did have children or the benefit of that is because I believe the greatest contribution we can leave to this planet and this world are the ones we leave behind. So the folks and the people who want to have children and raise them morally and ethically.
Yeah, but what happens if you give your child everything and it winds up like Michael Douglas's son allegedly selling crank in a hotel room and bring shame to the father and the grandfather? What do you do in that case?
Unfortunately, you have to live with it. You've done the best you can as a parent.
Yeah, but you got to understand, children are a crapshoot, my friend. I don't care how good you are as a parent. And you can't always say it's the parents' fault either, and you can't take credit for the good children either. That's the thing you got to remember.
Savage.
We're going to go back to children. Are they worth having because of the high cost? But there's a story that we linked up on michaelsavage.com from the New York Post that says the police have done a blood test on the woman who was driving the wrong way on a highway, and she was high on vodka and marijuana. 7 miles she drove on a highway back way, wrong way. She killed herself. She killed her children. She killed her brother's three children. It's unbelievable to me that you don't understand the dangers of marijuana, that you still don't get it. We all know drunk driving is evil and bad and dangerous. We understand that. But what about driving while high? If anybody in Marin County drives after 6 p.m. who's not high on marijuana, they should be given a prize here. And look at this story. Michael Douglas's son busted for meth sale in the middle of his father's hotel room, allegedly. It's frightening. It's unbelievable to me. The grandfather, Kirk Douglas, Michael Douglas, incredible actors. By the way, this kid was a good actor. I saw him in a movie where they did the three men in a movie a couple of years ago. I loved it. The kid could have had a career in movies. Why? Why did this kid have to become a drug addict? What is it in that family that he was trying to be that he couldn't be? He needed money? He couldn't have gone to his father or grandfather for money? So something's wrong here. I don't know. So talk about children. So don't assume you have a child necessarily thinking it's going to be work out fine. Look at the world around you. I'm asking you if it's worth it. Why? I like to watch certain kind of shows on TV. One of them I like to watch is either the lockups where they got the guys in jail. They always scare you with who's in jail and all of that. And there's some of them are truly frightening characters, you know, behind bars. I mean, they are really frightening. They are the ones who should be on the front lines fighting Islamic terrorism in Afghanistan along with our military if they could be controlled. I mean, these are the guys who would run into a minefield and cut their throats for us. These are the guys who in other times would have been fighting for us instead of being locked up behind bars. But let's put that aside for a minute. They interview them, and most of them say, I want to get out for my kid, my child. Now, you don't know whether they're BSing the camera girl or whatever. They all want a child. Or you look at the organized criminals that are caught. They usually have children. They live for their families. Why? The wise guys, why do they all have families? What's inherently in the DNA of a human being to want to have children? What is it? Is it necessarily something that you're going to gain from a child? What does a child give you? Usually it's a one-way street of you giving them. Now, there are rare exceptions, I admit, but they're far and few between. Why do people have children? They're not easy. Yes, when a child is a baby, if they're born healthy and you're lucky enough to have a healthy child, they're amazing to watch a child be born and to raise the child. It brings something out in you that you can't write about, you can't read about. You have to be there and you have to feel it. It changes you. All of your cells change when you have a baby. It changes everything in you. You start looking at the world a different way and in a better way. You take better care of yourself and you become protective towards them and you start to see society in a different way. But, you know, when a child hits those years, I don't know what the years are, 11, puberty they call it, whatever, puberty, schmuberty. In other words, when they start to get desires for the opposite sex, hopefully, unless they live in Marin County, at that point in their life, they don't want to know you too much anymore. And as I say, you know, you continue to treat them like their children and they don't want to be treated like babies anymore at that point, nor should they. So you wind up at that point overprotecting the child. They're trying to break away. You're trying to overprotect. And you go on vacations with them. And as I said to you, when they're 11, 12, 13, it's like taking a strange couple on vacation that you pay for and they don't talk to you. You're trying to entertain them, be entertaining, talk at dinner. They're sitting there, mum, not a word. They don't eat the food. They only want the dessert. They can't wait to get away from you. But so you got to put up with And then, of course, there's the wonders of college. When they go off to college, the college students today, glorified houses of ill repute, colleges. I love it. Take a look at what's in college today. College, the Ivy League. They produce wonders like Obama. That's the Ivy League today. New York City, WOR, John, you're on the Savage Nation. Go ahead, please.
Hi, I'd like to give you a quick sidebar on that drunk who was driving the car. She also killed three men, three innocent victims driving the right way.
I'm sorry, you're right. She killed them in the oncoming lane, yes.
Correct. But getting back to the original story, which I'm very glad you did. It's a great story. I'm 51 years old. I make a great salary, and my biggest regret is never having children.
So, in other words, all that sex and no kids, huh?
If you think so.
Well, you know, John, I used that line on some older friends who, you know, always boast about their conquests and have no children. And the one way to get even with them, if you are a man who's raised children, is to say, wow, all that sex and no children, how sad. But why didn't you get married? Because you had too much fun, you had it too easy with women, what?
I put a lot into my career, a lot into what I was doing in life, and the pages on the calendar just slipped by.
So, in other words, you were so devoted to your career that you paid not that much attention to finding a woman suitable to be a mother, right?
Correct. I always thought it would just happen one day without a lot of effort, and it requires a lot of effort.
Oh, it's a full-time job. Particularly today, the women are not, you know, what they were 30 years ago. The women have become more like guys, thanks to the hags in the women's movement. And that's why the white race is dying. That's why they won't reproduce, because the women want to be men. They want to behave like men. They want to act like men. They've been encouraged to think like men, act like men, be like men. Consequently, they don't want to be women and they don't want to be mothers. So you could thank Bella Abzug and her cabal of witches for this.
Yeah, with the hat. Bella with the hat.
Yeah, remember her, that doll, that prize? Thanks for the call. Houston, Steve is on the other side of the line. Steve, go ahead, please. You're on the Savage Nation.
Thank you, Michael. I'm 35 years old, and I have dogs, and I'm not going to have kids. And I'm going to tell you why. I don't want my kids in schools getting indoctrinated with liberalism, Muslim sensitivity, homosexuals getting married, adopting kids. You know, I don't want to put them through that. The economy's bad. Why have another mouth to feed? But my main reason, Michael, I am very outspoken, just like you, about Obama and illegals and socialism.
Yep.
These people may come after me one day because I'm vocal. I don't want my kids being targets. So if they're going to come after me.
No, it's a very, hey, trust me, your thoughts are all rational, but let me say this, Steve. It's exactly men like you who need to have children. You're the exact kind of father that we need in this country. And let me explain something to you. Tell me when in history it has been easy to have children. Tell me when in history your ancestors found it smooth sailing ahead, and they went ahead because it was so easy for them to have children. Where did your people emigrate from? What country?
I don't know too much about that. I think I have Irish, Swedish, a little German.
All right, whatever they were. So you're European, you're of European descent? All right, so what? At what age, what period of historical time was it ever easy to have a child? During the Middle Ages? During the plague? How come people still had children? In other words, there's some deeper instinct for having children than worrying about the society at large. You cannot let the communists scare you off from the gene pool. Let them scare themselves off from the gene pool. Dave, I suggest that you actually look for a woman, a good woman, and you link up with her, and you're going to become 10 times stronger than you are alone. That would be my advice to you. And I'm not a matchmaker, Steve. Don't get me wrong. But I can guarantee you there are at least a dozen women listening to this show right now who would love to meet you. But I can't do that for a number of reasons. I once did a dating show when I was a local host where guys would call, then I'd put them up with the women. Actually, I had a marriage take place once. But there's too much risk involved because there's psychos out there, Steve, and I know you're not one of them. Thanks for the door. You don't know who anybody is. I got to take the guy in. Play the sitar music for a minute. I got to clear my head for a minute. Look what's on the website. Bare-chested Putin strikes a macho pose. Vladimir Putin has buffed up his action man image and raised the pinup stakes among world leaders with another set of bare-chested holiday pictures. Certain point, you know, I don't care how macho you are, you could do without the other shirt off. I mean, I'm sorry, he looks like a tough guy, and I'm sure he is, but I don't care who you are, after the age of 50, your pecs start to look like your mother, not like your father. I mean, what are they? It's just nature that way. There's no way to fight aging. You could slow it down, but you're not going to live forever. That's why you may as well just give up. No, come on, that's a lot of people do. Look at the suit Michael Douglas is wearing in that picture with his kid. Sad. Older men don't know how to dress. The hair comes out of the ears, the nose, the hair grows out of the eyes. No wonder the women look for younger men, the so-called cougars. The older men have money, okay, big deal. Look at Jack Nicholson. They showed a picture of him dancing. Big deal. Some tardy men. Some hooker down there, like he's having a good time. You had to go there to find a hooker. You didn't have enough in Los Angeles. Discoing at 4 in the morning. Oh, how exciting. I'm having nightmares at 4 in the morning. It's perfectly fine by me. I get up perfectly happy every morning. I get rid of all of my fears through nightmares. And nightmares are normal. Who needs a good night's sleep? How boring. Why would you want a good night's sleep? What do you want, like a flat line in your head? I can't wait to go to sleep at night not knowing what nightmares I'm going to have that night. It's like in Technicolor 3D. Every worst nightmare in the world I have. Never hurt my health. All the medical science is backwards. They want you to suppress everything you feel, everything you think, everything you know. They think you're supposed to flatline. Anywho, here we are. Clinton's undermine Obama, meet Kim Jong-il while Hill grandstands. They're trying to make a comeback. You know, when Clinton was president, Jimmy Carter upstaged Clinton by going to see Kim Jong mentally ill, and Clinton got very pissed off, right? So now Bill Clinton undermines Obama, goes there, gets the two journalists, so-called, back, and what is he doing it for? Tell me why Bill Clinton did this. To advance his wife's career. In other words, she's Secretary of State. Why did he go? Tell me why he went, not her. Think about these two. They're waiting in the wings, my friend. They want the West Wing again. They know that Obama's extremely unpopular, and they are waiting for the opportunity for her to become president. Now, that's another question. Would she be less of a Leninist than he is, than Obama? I don't really know. It's hard to say. I think that they're more pragmatic than Obama, who is still the professor trying to push the left-wing professor's view of his world onto the rest of us, while the Clintons have been around long enough to have met, I think, the middle ground, number one. And Bill has gotten so much money over the years that I think he's been somewhat inoculated against the kind of socialism you see coming out of Obama. You know what I'm saying? But I really don't know what kind of leader she would be. She has done nothing for the Michael Savage story, which is a mistake for her, because I will prevail one way or the other. She could have a big win here by stepping in for me the way she has done for others. You say, well, they were arrested. Yes, they were. It's certainly a more severe case. But for a Western commentator such as myself, which is what I am, to be banned in Britain is a major league embarrassment for Hillary Clinton. She is the Secretary of State of the United States of America. One of her job duties is to represent the citizens of the United States of America to foreign countries. For me to be banned for reasons of free speech, to suppress my free speech, for Michael Savage to have been selected by the government of England to be banned in order to balance the list of terrorist Muslims is something that should offend Hillary Clinton. But from the point of view of realpolitik, she ought to step in right now, and she should get the victory. Because I am going to get it one way or the other. I will be off that list. It's going to take time, but it will happen. I'll be right back. Savage. It is the Savage Nation. Middle-income family spends $221,000 to raise a baby. That's low. That's much more than that. Much higher than that. But it's expensive. And the question is, are children worth it? And why do you have children? I've been asking that for almost an hour now. And some have said no. Some have said yes. And, you know, I look, not everyone should have a child. Let me make it very clear. I mean, there's no necessity for you to have a child. I mean, some should and some shouldn't. There are people who should not have children. It doesn't mean they're bad people. There are people who are too egocentric. There are people who are too narcissistic. In other words, too selfish to have a child. The child grows up crazy from a narcissistic parent who does not pay them attention or competes with them. I mean, we know them. Remember Mommy Dearest, for example, with Joan Crawford? I'm giving an extreme example. They're much worse than that, where the mother is in competition with the daughter or doesn't pay attention to the daughter, or worse, beats the daughter, whatever. That should have had a child? So, I mean, we're not talking about the obvious who shouldn't have, like the welfare people who have them just for the money. We're talking about psychologically where people are unfit to have a child. So don't get me wrong. I'm not saying everyone should have a child for the sake of, you know, the greater good of America. But it's an interesting question. And that's why I'm asking you, do you have children and why did you have them and are you glad you have them, given the cost and the expense and the sacrifice, particularly right now with the economy going in the toilet? But you look back in the age of the Grapes of Wrath, for example, they had 5, 6, 7, 8 children. They wouldn't have thought of aborting a child in those days. They wouldn't have thought of not having children in those days. They spread, the food was shared, you know, they got along, somehow they got through it. I'll never forget when I was young and I was just starting out, my aunt, God rest her soul, I loved her. She was so smart. She was one of the, like, down-to-earth, like, spoken Russian realism. She spoke in black and white, let me put it to you that way. Everything with her was blunt and straightforward. She could have been a good talk show host, but, you know, they didn't have it in those days. So we were talking about children. So she said to me, you don't need more than 2. She says, have 2 and raise them right. Just boom. That's it. That was the beginning and the end of the conversation. She said, raise 2 right. That's all you need. Meaning, how many should we have? 3, 5? You know, some have more. She's raised 2 right. And, you know, go try to raise more than 2 children. It's not easy. Some do. I mean, I meet people who have more than 2. I don't know how they do it. I was in the mall last week. I'm a mall hound. And it's like a town area, you know, it's like the equivalent of a town center today, a mall. A mall, when you think about it, an outdoor mall with a restaurant, coffee shop, this and that, is the town. Because who goes to a town really anymore? Where are their towns? So I see a whole spectrum of people go by. I see a young guy, nice looking guy, 4 children. And he's a handsome guy. This guy could have been like, you know, a runaround, 100 children, women only wanted. Why does he have children, I ask myself? What motivated him? Or I read the other day, for example, there's an actor and a producer. Oh God, his name is escaping me now. He's a pretty good actor, too. He has 3 children with a woman. They've been living together for 8 years. They just got married. He was in the movie with, he's in 100 different movies. He's the producer of that terrible series that I despise. I'm drawing blanks here. This is terrible. You're watching a man deteriorate before your ears. I can't remember. Entourage. He produces Entourage. which I can't stand. I can't stand any of the characters. They're the snottiest kind of guys. I can't stand that kind of guy. Creeps, Hollywood creeps. They disgust me. They're the antithesis of what the white male should be, those vermin on Entourage. Big deal. What do they stand for? Getting high and getting eld? You know, big deal. I don't like it anyway. So well, who's the producer? Come on, help me out here, guys. You should have... What? Still looking. Eight guys, they're searching. 18 ISDN sites, ISBN. Who is the guy I'm talking about? He was in the movie The Departed. Remember? Mark Wahlberg, thank you. That only took 4 minutes for me to remember. That's very nice. I think I'm wearing my pajamas over my tuxedo as well. Here, Mark Wahlberg got married last week to his long-term girlfriend. They had 3 children together, and they got married. He did the right thing, finally. You have children, you get married. You got a child, you get married. That's it. That's all there is to it. End of the story. Don't ask yourself a question. You get married. That's it. Don't look to the stars for the answer. Look to what's right. But he did the right thing. So there's an example. Why he couldn't have gone out with 100 women a week? Why did he decide, for example, a guy like with everything in the world in terms of fame, good looks, money, why did he decide to stick with one woman, have children, and get married? Why? You ask yourself. Not everybody is motivated to run around and, you know, have sex every 5 minutes. Some are, some aren't. And they could, some couldn't, they don't. Don't assume everyone who gets married couldn't run around. Why don't they? So what is it in the genetic coding of a human being to have children? What is it? What's the purpose of it all? What's the meaning of it all? I ask you these questions because the issue of the cost of children came up. Middle-income family spends $221,000 to raise a baby, and I asked, are children worth it? Why or why not? In the next hour, we'll talk about something else. I'm sure many people are going to continue to talk about this, but, you know, you want me to talk about North Korea and the 2 journalists, so-called? A journalist already. Nobel Prize. I'm invited to the White House maybe for a sushi now.
Savage.
Warning. The Michael Savage Show contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised.
And now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation. Here is Michael Savage.
Summer. It is August 4th. It is the beginning of summer at the Hotel Ozone, not actually the end of summer at the Hotel Ozone. It's a slow time. It's a summertime. I actually experienced 10 minutes of summer the other day. It's very hard to feel the seasons when you're in radio because you're every day the same thing. You know, you got to be involved with the news and the this and thinking. I have a van. One of the things I cherish is a Chevy van, which I use very seldom. It's in a garage all the time, covered. A Chevy Savannah van, like with a pop top, with captain's chairs, and a big TV in it. In the past, when we got it 5 years ago, I used to go to L.A. in it. And I like going down Highway 5. We don't do it anymore. But the other night after the show, I got in the van with Teddy, my dog, and I took a short drive, local, out to a yacht harbor out in Western Marin. I don't know where I was. And I watched the sun go down. I watched the fog come blowing back through over the mountains, over the western mountains, the coastal range, so to speak. And, you know, for 5-10 minutes, I realized how beautiful the world really is, and I had my summer. I don't need this every day. I don't know. It'd be nice. Putin goes to Siberia horseback riding, throwing himself in rivers, whatever, ever to Easter Zone, you know. Well, here we are. So we're talking about the issue of children, because the AP put out an Obama story telling you children are very expensive. And the implication is that after they push socialized medicine, we're going to need child care from the government, because that's the way it's done in Daddy Cuba's, in Daddy Fidel's country. And, of course, Obama learned at the footstool of Fidel Castro, Joseph Stalin, and the others on how to raise, you know, that it takes a village. And in the communist Potemkin village, we have universal health care, then we have universal child care, we have universal psychiatric care, we have universal police care, we have universal care that stems all from the dictatorship of Obama. And we're not talking about Obama because we've done it. We know who he is. He's a naked Marxist. And that doesn't mean he's a bad guy. It means that he's just un-American, that his entire system of thought is alien to the country. And most Americans who think know that. But when you read that over 37 million Americans are on antidepressants, and you add to that number the people who are drunk, then you add to that number the people who are on marijuana, then you add to that number the people who are on cocaine, you realize that there are very few millions left who are conscious and aware of the fact that we are losing our freedoms in this country on a daily basis. So here we are, and we're talking about children. Why do you have children in a world like this? That's really the next question. Should you have children in a world like this? And I remind you, people had children during the plague, they had children during the Little Ice Age, they had children during the Irish potato famine, they had children. People, even in the death camps, believe it or not, there were cases of Jewish people having a child in a death camp. Why? Why would they have a child in a death camp? Hide the infant from the Nazis. Why would they have a child? What is this? What kind of madness is this to have a child when you have nothing to eat and you're being tortured to death? How is this possible? So what's the human desire for children? Where does it come from? Is it so inherent in the human race? Well, it seems to be, except in San Francisco and New York. It seems to be an inherent drive in people to get married and have children. And so the question is it worth it? And why? Or why not? So let's go to the calls on the Savage Nation. Let's start on the East Coast right now. New York, WOR, John, children is the question. What's your comment, please?
Dr. Savage, it's not to be, you know, simplistic, but it's the joy. It's the happiness. It's the sharing with your child. I mean, my wife and I are married for 23 years. We have three children. My greatest regret in my life is that we did not have a fourth, because I sat down with a piece of paper and a pencil and figured out that maybe I couldn't afford it. Maybe I should have been on welfare and I could have had nine of them.
Yeah, well, or an illegal alien. You see, the way to have more would have been for you to go over the border, grow a mustache, change your name, and then the ACLU would have been waiting for you.
Yeah, I mean, it's something that bothers me to the core all the time. And, you know, then you hear about this Octomom. I mean, that infuriates me.
Well, there you go. She should have children like my dog should have children. My dog should have children better than her. So your regret is that you didn't have a fourth. Thank you. So let me read Genesis, the good book. And God blessed them. Well, first you have to go back. And God says, let us make man in our image, after our likeness, and let them have dominion. Now, you know, this is interesting. Listen to how the Hebrew is written in the translation. And God said, let us make man in our image. What do you mean by us? What do you mean us? Who is he talking to? Who was God referring to? And he said, let us make man in our image, after our likeness. He didn't say, let me make man in my image, after my likeness. It says, let us make man in our image. Us. Who is us? After our likeness, and let them have dominion over the fish of the sea, and over the fowl of the air, and over the cattle, and over all the earth, and over every creeping thing that creepeth upon the earth. And of course, he foresaw San Francisco, where the creeper things would eventually take over. And in 27 of Genesis, it is written, and God created man in his own image. In the image of God created he him. Male and female boys and girls created he them. And God blessed them, and God said unto them, here it comes, be fruitful and multiply, and replenish the earth and subdue it, and have dominion over the fish of the sea, and etc., and over the fowl of the air, and over every living thing that creepeth upon the earth. And so there it is. And God says, I've given you every herb yielding seed which is upon the face of all the earth, and every tree, and so forth and so on. And it says, and to every beast of the earth, and every fowl of the air, and to everything that creepeth upon the earth, He said, you shall have dominion. He meant dominion over the creeps in Austin, Texas, San Francisco, the Upper West Side of New York. And God saw everything that he hath made, and behold, it was good. And there was evening, and there was morning the sixth day. And that's it. But the point here is that after Allah, he let them have dominion over them. And he said, and be fruitful and multiply is the point. So at a certain point, you're not supposed to even think about it. In other words, in my day, if a guy didn't get married and have a child, he was looked upon in a strange way. I don't happen to know one person amongst the guys that I grew up with who did not get married and have children. I don't say every marriage worked out. I didn't keep in touch with them. I don't know how it worked out. But it was a given. You met a girl by a certain age and you got married, or else your father, you know, whatever, your mother, something was wrong if you didn't get married and have children. That's the way it was. In other words, there was social pressure, which there should be. But now, no social pressure. So look what the children are. Take a look at them. No social pressure. Take a look at them. Take a look at what you have walking around the earth today. No social pressure. Oh, no, give him time. Give him time to grow up. He's 41 years old living with his mother. Give him time. You need social pressure. Everyone needs social pressure. That's what family is for, to cause social pressure on a child so the child is molded into a human being, a decent human being, a civil human being, instead of an animal walking around living for himself. An animal lives for itself. A human being lives for the family. That's the way we were raised. And what I just said to you, whether it's offensive to you or not, is the way 99% of the world thinks, particularly in traditional societies. They think the way I think. And I will tell you as I stand here right now that people who are alien to me culturally, alien to me politically, agree with every word I just said about family. You don't even have to call to say it. I know it. I know when I strike a chord with people, because I know what people think, and I know how people think, and I know where you come from, how you think. Trust me on that. So what can we talk about? Are they worth it or not worth it? Well, it depends upon the child, I suppose. But why? Let's look at it from another point of view. Are children worth it? Let's take it another way. What do you think about women 60 having children? Zero. No good. Stop it. I don't go for that. I'll tell you another thing that disturbs me deeply. Fertility drugs. A great deal of the illness in our society, I know this is a very sensitive topic, a great deal of the illness in our society, children with sort of problems, and trust me, this is a very delicate topic for me because my brother, they didn't have fertility pills, and my brother was born sick, and he lived a horrible life in a home and all of that. I saw the suffering and the suffering in the family. So things happen to people for other reasons that you don't control. But when you start adding fertility medication to children, people who can't bear, you have to ask yourself from an ethical point of view, should everyone have a child? There may be a reason why a couple is infertile. Maybe reasons that you don't know. Maybe reasons you shouldn't know. Maybe reasons that should be left alone and that couple should adopt children. There are certainly enough children on the earth who do not have decent parents who would love to have loving parents. Why should you give them fertility drugs? I'll be right back.
Savage.
Very interesting to me what's going on with this whole birther controversy. O'Reilly, the Blondie stone thrower, is refusing to have Joe Farah on from WorldNet Daily. They're all attacking Lou Dobbs. Lou Dobbs is not a talented broadcaster in radio. He's terrible, but he's good on television. And the left wants him thrown off the air. I told you once they came for me, who would they come for next? None of them came to my aid. So Lou Dobbs is getting what he deserves. They're all going to get it. O'Reilly's going to get it. They're all going to get it because they won't protect me. I told you they'd go after them one at a time. They came after me first. They wouldn't come to my aid. And now they're going after them one at a time, and it's all coming out of the Obama administration. The same way any other dictatorship operates is they take down the media that opposes them. You know, I watched this morning when that old hag, Helen Thomas, 89, and Obama comes out with a birthday cake, and he sits down next to her, and she coos. And you take a look at the news people behind Helen Thomas, and you say to yourself, oh, my God, what trouble we're in. They were all sitting there with their faces wide open with smiles and gawking. This is the Washington Press Corps, I said to myself. This is who we rely upon. to be watchdogs over the socialist administration. These children, these idiots, these college morons are sitting there gawking over a cake that the president's shining on with them, with the cake with Helen Thomas. Don't they understand what their job is in a free society? I said to myself, and I turned it off, and I went back and finished my breakfast. And the reason Dobbs is getting it now and not getting my support is because Dobbs did nothing for me. When they came for Michael Savage, you did not raise your voice because you hated Michael Savage. Eventually, they're going to come for O'Reilly. Then they're going to come for Wallbanger. I don't think they're going to bother with the hemorrhoid because he's too much of a fool for anyone to bother with. But they're going to come after the top guys who actually have a following of people who have brains and believe in them. The hemorrhoid's never going to have a following because he's such an obvious... whatever, let it go at that. I don't have to put anyone down to have what I have. So, in the next couple of segments, we're actually going to have... what's his name on? I forgot already. I'm sorry. I'm not... again, I'm drawing another moment here. Philip Berg, former Assistant Attorney General for Pennsylvania, lifetime Democrat, who I had on the show, what, 2 years ago, a year ago, about the birth issue, remember? I had him on before this started. I did this. And Berg is still active. And we're going to have him on shortly on the Savage Nation. So don't think I'm not into this, but here's my position. And you got to listen to me very carefully. Write this down, put it down on the internet, and get it right. Here's where I stand on the whole birther issue. I believe that the Obama administration is capable, even if Obama was not born in America, I don't know where he was born, but let's say he was born in Kenya. Let's, for argument's sake, take that position. This is the U.S. government you're dealing with. They print money. They print bonds. They can't produce a birth certificate anytime they want. They couldn't doctor one up that would be as authentic as your birth certificate if they wanted. They're playing the birthers for fools. And they're waiting for this to grow to such a point, at which point they're going to produce the actual birth certificate, either real or imagined, real or counterfeited, and they're going to undercut the entire birther movement and make the entire birther movement look like idiots. Now, that doesn't mean that I don't agree that he might have not have been born in America. I hope you understand what I just said to you. That's number one. But number two, the real subtext is not whether or not Obama was born in Indonesia or Kenya. The real subtext is, he loyal to America? That's what the underlying question really is. And the reason millions of Americans ask that is because he does not appear to be loyal to America. Everything the man does or says, every act he tries to impose, is un-American. What do I mean by that? All of his economics are un-American. They're all state-run. They're all centralized. Centralized economy is not American. It's not a free market economy. This country was built upon a free market, not upon a state market. That's number one. We are not a socialist nation. And yet you have radical leftist socialists advising Obama because he is one of them. So the real issue is he really loyal to America? Many millions of Americans don't think so. But I think that you're going out on a very, very, very dangerous limb by tying all of these questions to the birth issue. Because at the right time, the Chicagoans are going to produce a birth certificate that you're asking for. It will be irrefutably a birth certificate, and whether it's real or fraudulently created, you will not be able to tell. If they can print money, my friends, and they can print bonds, they can print the birth certificate that'll meet any test whatsoever. And then what are you going to do? Tell me what you're going to do with months and years of labor on this limb. You're going to be cut off and fall off the cliff. So I would recommend to all of my colleagues on the right wing who are into this birther thing, be very careful. Because you're dealing with a very clever group of people. And the real issue is Obama loyal to America? I think by his actions, you can ask that question or reasonably conclude no. His trips to Europe, where he apologizes for America, everywhere he went, he got on his hands and knees and apologized for America. He goes to Saudi Arabia and apologizes for American actions. Wherever he went, he apologized for American actions. The mark of Neville Chamberlain is not the mark of America. But I'm not so sure Neville Chamberlain is the right model, by the way. Neville Chamberlain may be too benign a reference when it comes to Chairman Obama. We'll have to wait and see. So listen to what I just said. Write it down. Hear me out on this. And don't misinterpret or misquote me. I said it exactly the way I think it. And I think that at some point, this administration will produce exactly what the right says doesn't exist.
Savage.
It is the Savage Nation. We're going to move from, is it worth having children and the cost of children, to the issue of the birth, Obama, where he was born. It's a big issue. It's a very hot issue. I've told you where I stand on it. And you can quote me on what I said. But right now we're going to go to a man who's been pushing this a long time. Philip Berg is our guest. He's been on the show before. Long before this became a big issue, Mr. Berg was on the show. Now, the intriguing part about Philip Berg is that you can't call him a member of the right wing. Why? Lifetime Democrat, assistant attorney general, I believe, in the state of Pennsylvania. Yet he believes that there's something wrong here. Philip Berg, welcome to the Savage Nation. Go ahead, please. Did I state anything incorrectly?
Well, I was a deputy attorney general of Pennsylvania, but no big deal. Great to be on your show again, Michael, and hello to everyone out there in the Savage Nation.
Philip, you were on, what, over a year ago on this topic?
Oh, yeah. I first started in my first lawsuit was filed August 21st, 2008.
Now, there are others who have been pushing this very hard, like Joe Farah of WorldNet Daily, as you know, and now Lou Dobbs has picked it up and running with it, and he's getting attacked. So what's your position, Mr. Berg?
My position is 1,000% that Barack Hussein Obama, who I really think his legal name is not that. I think his legal name, and we can go into that, is Barry Soturo. I think he's a total fraud. I think it's the biggest hoax against the citizens of this country in 230 years. You know, we're not dealing with someone stupid here. We're dealing with someone from Occidental, Columbia, Harvard Law School, head of the Harvard Law Review, taught constitutional law for 10 years. You know, Arnold Schwarzenegger, people talked about running for president. What's he say? Amend the Constitution. What's Barack Obama said? He basically says, I don't care about the Constitution. I'm walking all over the Constitution by his actions. We know nothing
yes.
about Barack Hussein Obama. All of his records are sealed, not only the birth certificate, every record. And for his birthday, I put something out as far as on the Internet. I said, happy birthday, Barry Soturo, a.k.a. Barack Hussein Obama, August 4th. Major issue. Has Obama legally changed his name from his adopted name of Barry Soturo? If not, and we do not believe he did, Obama has committed fraud every time he signed his name in each of the 50 states to run for president, as well as ongoing since then.
And, Philip, wait a minute. You're a lifetime Democrat. Is that correct?
Absolutely. I was a committee person in Philadelphia and Montgomery County, Pennsylvania for 31 years, chairman of the Democratic Party in Montgomery County, Pennsylvania, member of Democratic State Committee for 8 years, and a candidate in the Democratic primaries in Pennsylvania for governor and United States Senate.
So wait a minute. So let's hold it now. So you're a real apostate. I mean, are you being attacked by Rahm Emanuel's machine?
No, I mean, I think they're afraid to come after me because it'll bring the story bigger than it is. But now it's growing by.
Well, Philip. That's what I mean. They're going after guys who are on the right in the right wing, who are anti-immigrant, etc. But you're afraid. You think that the reason they won't even mention you is because you're actually one of them.
That's right, because that blows their story. I mean, they all get up there, and all these talk show hosts. Huffington Post had an article the other day. But the headline was the key. It said, the only thing worse than birthers, which they say people like me are the non-birthers. Because some of these guys are looking like idiots with some of the comments they're making out there. You know, they're waving documents and saying, this is his birth certificate. Bill Maher the other day does a 10-minute rendition of Against the Birthers. I mean, why are they talking
about what do you expect from a stoner from Hollywood? I mean, you know, he may as well be playing a stoner movie for what he has in terms of credibility. He's a nobody. But he's not a credible personality. He's just a stone comedian, in my opinion. But, you know, you're a guy who's spent his life in politics, Democrat politics, liberal Democrat politics in Pennsylvania, and you say that Obama is what? Not a citizen? Look, here's my position, and then we'll have the conversation, Philip. I said it before you came on the air. I don't know where he was born, but I think it's pretty dangerous to just go out on a limb and say he was not born in America and was sure of that for one reason. Here's the reason. You're dealing with the most powerful people on earth. They produce money. They print money, rather. They print certificates. Why isn't it possible or plausible, rather, that at some point they're going to forge a birth certificate that meets all the qualifications of such?
Well, yes and no. See, here's the thing. If they should have done that back in June of 2008, 2 months before I got involved in this, this topic's been around now for two and a half years. In June 2008, they put on their campaign website a document called a COLB, C-O-L-B, a Certification of Live Birth. But the document is like a fraud. It's a phony. If they were going to do it, they should have done something. They should have had a better forger. I mean, what they put up there, you know, a 10th grader probably could have done.
Okay, all right. So they had amateurs do it because they weren't yet in power.
Right,
but now that they run the printing presses, couldn't they forge an authentic birth certificate?
Well, here's the problem with doing that. When I first filed my lawsuit, I said, show me the long-form vault birth certificate and I'll go away. Since that time, it gave me time to investigate, and that's where we found out that he was adopted in Indonesia. How did he come back through there? Like, I want to see number one.
Wait, let's stop right here. Hold it now. What do you mean adopted in Indonesia? Where was he born?
Even if he was born in Hawaii, which he wasn't, okay, I think that his citizenship is affected after that. But I really believe, you know, and we have a statement on our website, ObamaCrimes.com, from his step-grandmother, Sarah Obama, who's now 85 years of age. She states she was in the hospital when he was born in Mombasa, Kenya. Okay? Now,
Philip, but isn't the issue bigger than this? Isn't it not so much where he was born, but you distrust his loyalty to America and the principles of the Constitution? Isn't that what I've heard from you?
He's, you know, why is he doing this? It's a total fraud. You know,
but let's assume I agree with you on that point. I think he's acting in a very dangerous manner in socializing the financial industries, then the auto industry, now the healthcare industry. I mean, what's next? The man is out of step with what America is. We all know that. Does that bother you at all, even though you're a Democrat?
Absolutely, because if you really take a look at what he's doing, he's sending this country down the drain right now. We don't know what his ulterior motive is. And if he's really foreign-born like he believes he is, and he's lied about everything about himself. I mean, he even lied, it came out recently, he lied where he met his wife. I mean...
What do you mean about that?
He came out with some story about he met his wife someplace, and I don't know what it was, but he met his wife, it's documented, at the Chicago law firm where they both worked. I mean, so, you know, if he can't even keep it straight, you know, if he has to...
So who is behind him? If you suspect that he's a foreign-born, nefarious character who's very Machiavellian and very smart, who's going to take America down the communist path to destroy this country's freedoms, which is what I hear, Philip, even though you're a Democrat... Pardon me if I'm putting words in your mouth, but who is behind him? Who found him? Who cultivated him? And who put him into this position? Who?
I don't have that answer. But, I mean, if we had a free press in this country, and thank God for people like you who can, we can talk about things like this, our national press has never vetted him. They whatever he says, they go, oh, it's wonderful. I mean,
Philip, did you see this morning when Obama came out with the cake for Helen Thomas? Did you see that on TV?
Yes, I did.
Did you see the faces of the so-called White House press corps? They looked like gawking children at a teacher's birthday party.
Right, at the end, they couldn't wait to shake his hand or touch him. I mean,
I couldn't believe what I was looking at. There was not an independent, cynical face in the crowd.
Isn't that disgusting? I mean, it really is. About a year ago, George Bush questioned whether Putin had a free press over in Russia. You know, we better start questioning whether we have a free press here in this country because they're just beholden to him. Do you remember back when, I'm sure you remember, Dan Quayle misspelled the word potato?
Yes.
They never let it live him down. But Obama has flaw after flaw after flaw. You don't hear it. I love the one about 2 months before the November elections when he arrived in Oregon. He said, I'm now in my 57th state. And my staff wouldn't let me go to Alaska or Hawaii. I didn't know we had 59 states in this country.
Well, wait. Maybe he meant Kenya and Indonesia.
Absolutely.
All right. So Philip Berg, lifetime Democrat. You doubt Obama's birthplace. You doubt his loyalty to America. Correct me if I'm mistaken. You're frightened of the way he's stepping on our freedoms and where this might go, as am I. Who in the mainstream media has had Philip Berg on? Have you been on Larry King?
Nope.
Have you been on O'Reilly?
No, and I've challenged O'Reilly. I did a pilot for O'Reilly when he first went on to Fox a number of years ago.
Yeah.
They won't touch this subject. They won't.
Well, you know that I've been banned in the UK, and I'm not going to switch it to that. You know what's happened to me. You know that O'Reilly won't touch this subject, nor will Fox. Do you know that? We're living in a place where there is virtually no voice of opposition when it comes to the official party line.
Absolutely. If you need counsel to help you over there, I'll be glad to help you. Okay, how's that?
Well, I have some British attorneys that were doing a very good job, but, you know, more minds are better. Philip, let's get back to this. Where do you suspect Obama was born?
I really believe he was born in Mombasa, Kenya. And look, evidence of it. After the November 4th elections, and I don't even say he was elected on that day. I say he got more votes than someone else. What happened? Well, two major things happened. Number one, Kenya declared a national holiday. Well, you don't declare a national holiday for a grandson. They declared a national holiday because he was born there. Then what happened on November 6th, 2 days after the election, I don't have it in front of me, but the talk show host from Detroit called the ambassador to Kenya and congratulated him and then started asking, I'm paraphrasing it here, is his birthplace going to be honored over there? Well, it depends what they're going to do, but everyone knows where it is. And then a couple of days later, the ambassador said, oh, no, I made a mistake. I wasn't talking about Barack
Obama. Phil, let's say you get this to court. You've sued, and we had yesterday the woman on, Orly Tates from Israel, who's bringing a suit. Others are bringing suits. Is this eventually going to find its way into the courts and up into the court system?
Well, I have three. I have three cases pending in the federal court system right now. And we have a hearing scheduled. One was the one I filed September 21st. That's the one I bypassed the Third Circuit Court of Appeals when the judge knocked us out, stating that I didn't have standing. And standing for the listeners, Michael, is the judge basically said that Phil Berg doesn't have standing, Michael Savage doesn't have standing, none of your listeners have standing. Perhaps in the future, Congress will decide who has standing to question the U.S. Constitution.
Well, wait a minute. You mean you had no standing because he said so?
That's right. That's right. And now we're on appeal on that issue. But think about that. The Tenth Amendment. What's the Tenth Amendment say? Everything reverts back to we the people. I mean, how can no one have standing to sue this, to sue over the Constitution? I mean, how?
Well, what are they so afraid of? Either hear the case and let's look at the facts in a court of law. Why are they so afraid? The answer is they're afraid that you'll find out the truth. So let's run down this path together. You get it into a court, it goes all the way to the Supreme Court. You know that they're going to probably throw it out at that level.
Well, I'm hoping not when we get there on the merits. With that case to the Supreme Court, I filed for four applications for four injunctions. The first one I asked was to stay the election of November 4th. I knew that would never occur, but I had to try. Then I filed to stay the December 15th vote of the electors. And that they didn't go with, because I think the electors violated their duty, because they had a duty to...
Look, Philip, you're doing something here as well as the other folks who are pushing this in a way that's very interesting. Again, I say the issue is Obama's loyalty or disloyalty to America. You're taking it from the technical point of view of, is he even an American citizen and even legally a president, legally have the right to be a president to sit in that chair. You say you suspect not. I think that by pushing on this issue, terrible things are going to happen. I believe we're dealing with some of the most dangerous people on the planet. Don't you, Philip?
I agree. And I think that, you know, people question my safety. And I say, well, I'm safe because if something happened to me, it would jump to front page. We are dealing. But now what's happening is it's snowballing. And what happened is...
It is snowballing. Why is it snowballing all of a sudden where the left is getting hysterical? They're going crazy. I've never seen them this insane and this defensive. Why?
Well, I think the key was what happened June 30th. On June 30th, Congressman Castle from Delaware held a town meeting. I'm sure you saw that piece where a woman stood up and she said, here's my birth certificate. Where's Obama's birth certificate? You know, he must show it. I don't believe he's a natural-born citizen. And I'm paraphrasing short, but it hit the Internet, and in the first few days, 500,000 people saw it. But Congressman Castle came back and said, no, he is natural-born. The entire audience booed. And then something went on. Then they all stood up. I think this woman said, let's, you know, salute the flag, and they did the, you know, salute the flag, and everyone.
But Philip, listen, I've seen some middle of the road Republican senators, of course, they're all middle of the road or leftists, say this is a non-issue. And their position is that Obama could be undermined more effectively on his policies per se. In other words, his socialization of the financial industries, the billions of dollars that have gone missing in TARP funds, the takeover of the auto industry, the destruction of General Motors, and now the attempt to create a national health care plan, which is government medicine. These issues, they say, will undermine Obama faster and better than would the birth issue. What do you say to that?
Well, I think that's because they're afraid to step into this issue, but they're not going to do it because they can't attack those issues because they don't have a majority. Now, what's going to happen this month is critical. You know why it's critical? Because all the members of Congress went home. And they're going home. The House is home. Senate will be home in a few days. They'll go on vacation, but many of them will be holding town halls. And a lot of them, as reported, are afraid to have these meetings now.
Because of what's been going on with people jumping up and screaming and yelling about Obama and his birth and this and that.
I believe in the next month it's going to jump tenfold because people at home are concerned about the stimulus package not working, what are you doing to health care, but also they're going to bring up the birthing issue is now coming up, and they're going to realize that the real way to get at this guy, once we get enough people in this country to question where he was born, I believe we can force him to resign sometime by the end of this year.
Well, I suspect, as I've said before you came on the show, Philip, that this government which prints our money, this government which prints bonds, this government can print anything and they can forge a birth certificate. And in so doing, at that time, they'll undermine the entire movement. Don't you think so?
No, again, because if they had done that in June 2008, fine. But now it's growing so big. Like here, the thing I put out today. Has he legally changed his name after being adopted in Indonesia? And where do we get the facts of the adoption? In his book, which, you know, I think, I don't know who wrote it, but in his book he states, my stepfather returned, his parents divorced, his mother remarried. In the book he says, my stepfather returned to Indonesia before my mother and I. When my mother and I went there, I immediately went to school. Well, in the 1960s, Indonesia was at war. So we have, and the only ones who could go to school there were if you're natural born. Well, he wasn't born there, but you also got the natural born status if you were adopted. And we have the school record where his name is Barry Sotoro, S-O-E-T-O-R-O.
And he went to a Muslim school, didn't he?
Right, but he was never Muslim. Remember that? During the campaign.
Well, that was according to John McCain, the shame. We're speaking with lifetime Democrat, Deputy Attorney General of Pennsylvania, Philip Berg. Not a right winger, is he? I'll be right back.
Savage.
We have only a couple of minutes left with Philip Berg. What is his website? Put it back up, please. Philip Berg, before you come back, we're talking about whether or not Obama is an American citizen. The Constitution, Article 2, Section 1 states, quote, no person except a natural-born citizen or a citizen of the United States at the time of the adoption of this Constitution shall be eligible to the office of president. We are learning that many documents that would normally have been available have not been released, including Obama's kindergarten records, Punahou School records, Occidental College records, Columbia University records, Columbia thesis, Harvard Law School records, Harvard Law Review articles, scholarly articles from the University of Chicago, his passport, his medical records, his files from his years as an Illinois State Senator, Illinois State Bar Association records, any baptism records, adoption records are all missing. Is that true, Philip Berg?
Things unless you're trying to hide something.
But are all those records are hidden?
Everything's hidden, everything's sealed. We know nothing about him other than what he's told us, which is basically nothing either.
Wait a minute. Hold on. Philip, is this unusual for a president's, or is it common for a president's kindergarten records through whatever to be hidden?
No, it's usual that you know everything about someone. Last year they asked McCain about, he immediately produced his school records, he immediately produced his medical records.
And oh, this is
Obama
frightening.
Nothing.
Well, now the conspiracists are starting to worry me because what if he is, and what if the people who put him in power are, where are we going to be in a couple of years is the question. Isn't that what you fear, Philip?
Yes, I do, and that's why we have to stand up and act now. Listen, if I'm wrong.
Philip Berg, ObamaCrimes.com, ObamaCrimes.com. You've listened to Philip Berg, lifetime Democrat, not a member of the right wing. Wait until you see the smear machine start. The minute we get off the air here on the Savage Nation, Philip, get ready, because the radical left is going for you.
Savage.
Warning. The Michael Savage Show contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised.
And now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation. Here is Michael Savage.
A couple of topics that we've been talking about. Waiting in the wings and cash for clunkers. You know, it's interesting that Hillary Clinton would choose her own husband to send as an envoy to North Korea in order to secure the release of the two captive journalists. You see, a couple of weeks ago, the empty suits and the empty skirts were saying that Hillary Clinton was being shoved out of the picture by Obama, but it looks like she was just running silent and running deep. Why do I say that? Because now, as Bill met Ill, Hill was grandstanding. Now, keep in mind that these two are probably the most powerful Machiavellian people in Washington, D.C., maybe the world. And when they pull off an international public relations coup, such as getting the journalists freed from the prison camp of North Korea, you can bet that it's part of a larger scheme. Do you think that Bill and Hillary are just waiting in the wings to take over once Obama gets booed off the stage? She hasn't forgotten her defeat in 08 and would do anything to get back in power. She and her husband actually know the levers of power much better than Obama because they've been around for much longer. And while they're both leftists of the first order, would they actually do a better job than Obama? I'm not so sure. At least they have a degree of pragmatism that the neo-Marxist crowd around Obama does not. Do you think that Hillary Clinton and her husband are deliberately setting out to undermine Obama? We also talked about cash for clunkers. The midstream media will not have told you this, but did you know that most of the cars being bought through the billions of dollars cash for clunkers program are being made by Japanese companies? Why has the Obama administration refused to release this information? Well, because they're afraid that yet another of their political payoffs will be revealed. Play some sitar music, will you please? Listening to sitar music on the radio this morning, that's the traditional music of India. It has a tremendous power to it. Well, then after the music was over, white liberals started gushing about the music, and I started to really get angry. They were talking about how perfect the music was and how there was a kind of music for each time of the day, and wasn't it wonderful, and how advanced. I realized that what they were trying to do was cleanse themselves of their white guilt. Somewhere in the deep recesses of their minds, libs listen to traditional music, Indian in this case, and they feel bad that India was colonized by Europeans for so long, and they somehow want to try and make up for it. So white leftists like this listen to ethnic music, whether it's Indian music, Andean music, Mexican music, African music, even if they don't like it, because somehow in their minds it must be better than European music, more noble, more heroic, because these people suffered at the hands of the evil white male, and that makes it so. During the colonial era, British poet Rudyard Kipling wrote a poem called The White Man's Burden, which encouraged Europeans to take up colonization for the benefit of the peoples they subjugated. The white liberals of today are still carrying the white man's burden, even though they would call Kipling a racist. They go to ethnic restaurants because they assume ethnic food must be far better than American food. They revere the music and arts of every culture but their own as a means of public self-flagellation to demonstrate that although they may be white, they're not right. They understand the suffering of other peoples. They've transcended race, they think. Whereas in reality, they've only made themselves more racist, more burdened by the past, more tied into a system of mental colonialism than any of their ancestors were. While the former colonies of the Western powers may now be free, a far more evil power has colonized the minds of white leftists. And because their minds are enslaved, they continue to relegate the peoples of the world they pretend to revere to the status of servants and lackeys. And, of course, this is racism as well. See, Obama never worked in a factory. He was just picked by some powerful people in the world to become president. But he says that top income earners are just lucky. But you may not know it, but this lucky talk show host once worked in an ice cream factory. Let me explain to you what it's like. It's probably the worst job in the world, being on a production line in a factory. I should remind you, it's a tough job, and you have to have compassion and sympathy for poor people or people who don't speak the language who take these jobs. It's murder. It was in Long Island City, and it was an ice cream factory, and it was a hot summer. And the production line goes around in a conveyor belt. And I and a few of my friends worked in that factory along with, I think it was Puerto Rican women, by the way, largely on the production line. And the pit boss was an Italian, about 5'1", with a big mouth and mean. And he stood up on a platform over the production, the conveyor belt. So the boxes would come around, and you had, I don't know, whatever the number of seconds were, to pack 24 ice cream bars into the box. And you had to do it in a certain amount of time. Now, if you fumbled, you had to do this for hours on end. And let's say your mind was elsewhere, which it normally is, but you missed and dropped the bar. And he would stop the line, this guy up on the stand, and he'd start screaming, "You moron, you idiot. Look what you did to all the other workers, you stupid moron, you. You do it again, you're costing them money. Now start the line again." See, that's how America worked. When America was really good, we had guys like that pit boss who could call you a moron when you were an idiot or a moron and your mind was distracted. Today, of course, you can't call anyone a moron, even if they're a moron. Instead, you turn them into a home secretary in England, or you turn them into a senator or a congressman here from Minnesota. But that's how it worked in those days. You know? San Francisco, Robert, welcome to the Savage Nation.
Hey, Michael. It's an honor to speak with you. Your show, I love your show. And I know you got the Grand Banks. I came back from the Virgin Islands on a Grand Banks 42 to San Francisco back in 76.
You did a GB42. That's a hell of a seaworthy boat, isn't it?
All teak, yeah. And no caulking, you know, it's like a barrel. But, you know, I did a lot of varnish, too. I don't know, you sound like you've been through the ringer with the varnish deal on your boat.
Oh, my God. Well, it's got a lot of bright work on it. It's got the rails. It's got eyebrows around it, so-called. It's a lot of maintenance on boats that have teak. But, you know, I have teak decks. I wouldn't have a boat without them, because to me, without a teak deck, it's not a boat. It's an RV.
Oh, yeah, it's beautiful.
When I stand on a flybridge and I'm going out, I love to see the water come down onto the teak decks, because it changes the color of the teak. There's also a certain scent coming off teak wood when it's wet. It's gorgeous. I mean, there's a reason for it. You can also walk on it. You can also walk on it barefoot without getting a splinter.
Absolutely. A boat with a teak interior that's not varnished, if it's left on it, just oiled only, it always has that wonderful teak smell down below.
Well, this boat has all teak interior, but you never varnish it. What you do is you use only a damp cloth on it, and it'll maintain its luster if you keep the sun out of the inside.
Yeah, they're great boats, you know, and the varnish thing's real frustrating. It pretty much has to be done a few coats twice a year minimum,
That's right. Well, there's one product made in Florida that will last twice or three times as long. I'm not going to mention it because they don't advertise, but that's all. Whatever. I'll be right back. Play some sitar music, will you please? Short while ago, I talked about an article written by Selwyn Duke entitled "Britannia Ruled by Knaves, Savage Band to Fill White Man Quota." He joins us now. Selwyn, welcome back to the Savage Nation.
Hi, Michael. It's great to be on the Savage Nation again. You know, Michael, when I first heard that you'd been banned from traveling to England along with those Muslim terrorists and other miscreants, my first thought was that the public relations arm of the politically correct thought police had struck again. It only made sense. I mean, we know that Britain is now bedeviled by Islamic jihadists, so it had a legitimate reason to keep their most zealous fellows from the nation's increasingly volatile Muslim masses. But we also know something else. Those spineless Neville Chamberlain bureaucrats charged with this task have a motto. It's peace through capitulation. So they'd never want to be seen as singling out Muslims. So I just figured, Michael, that they had traded your reputation for peace in our time. Well, we now know this is all true, with the release just recently of those shocking documents you've been talking about on your show. We now know that the UK's Home Office did in fact ban you for racial reasons, to balance the Muslim jihadists on the list. So, I guess this tells us something. It tells us that the standard the left supposedly loves so much, that we should judge a man based on the content of his character and not the color of his skin, is out the window. Anyway, as to those documents, I'm sure they're only going to help you, Michael, in that defamation lawsuit you filed against Jackie Smith. And just to remind the audience, she's the former head of the Home Office who had to resign in disgrace. And these documents will help you because, after all, they contain some very interesting information. For instance, in one message authored by a Home Office official late last year, the person says, referring to you, Michael, quote, "I can understand that disclosure of the decision would help provide a balance of types of exclusion cases," unquote. And the documents also contain a recommendation labeled restricted that reveals, and this is what the Home Office said, quote, "We will want to ensure that the names disclosed reflect the broad range of cases and are not all Islamic extremists," unquote. And we also know something else now. It seems that this decision for racial balancing involved officials in the highest levels of British government. It might have even extended to Prime Minister Gordon Brown himself. And Michael, the audience should know that these documents also contain something that might be a smoking gun in your lawsuit. They have an explicit admission that banning you was unjust, with another unidentified official warning, quote, "I think we could be accused of duplicity in naming him," meaning you, Michael. Yes, Michael, and with these newly released documents, her claim that she truly viewed you as a threat seems like nothing but hot air. But, you know what, however your case plays out in court, there's no doubt that you were sacrificed to fill a quota.
I'd also like to remind the audience of why I am on the verge of filing a lawsuit. Not only did the government of England ban me, but Jackie Smith also libeled me in a press release issued in defense of the ban. She actually said that I was seeking to provoke others to serious criminal acts and fostering hatred, which might lead to inter-community violence.
Well, Michael, not only that, but every aspect of this case smacks of political correctness and expediency, starting even with the appointment of the villain in the story, Jackie Smith herself. Listen to this. Just recently, in another shocking development, she actually admitted incompetence. She said that when she became Home Secretary, she'd never run a major organization. She said that if she did a good job, it was more by luck than by any kind of development of skill. She also said that every single time she was appointed to a ministerial job, she thought that she wasn't up to the task. She said that. And she said, quote, "I didn't sleep for a week in 1999 when I got my ministerial job," unquote. Well, ain't political correctness grand, huh? And you know what this is like? It's like Sonia Sotomayor, Joycelyn Elders, Ruth Bader Ginsburg, and 1,000 others. Just like them, it's obvious that Smith was an affirmative action appointee. She got her position because of chromosome configuration, not qualifications. So, Michael, you know what we could say? I guess we could say that your story is one of a bureaucrat chosen by quota who then chose a victim by quota. And you know, this ought to give all of us pause, because your critics may rest secure in the knowledge that they're not as controversial as you are, Michael, but they should understand the implications of quota selection. Whether you're favoring a person based on quota or persecuting him based on quota, the standard is the same. You're selecting him not based on what he has done, but based on what he is. And who'll be chosen based on a profile next time? So, I would ask the critics this. Can you be sure that what you do and say will save you when what you are is precisely the sacrifice needed? Think about that. And really, you know what? Some would say it's this utilitarian approach of the Home Office that's most disturbing. Because it reminds me of the old saying, the opposite of love is not hate, but indifference. If Smith and her comrades had hated you, Michael, then in a strange way, it might have been a bit more noble. And what I mean is, at least then, in these bureaucrats' own minds, twisted though their minds are, they just might have believed they were dispensing justice. But the situation in question here is very different. It involved cold, detached calculation. Now, of course, this isn't to say that some of these bureaucrats don't also harbor deep hatred, but of what we can be sure is that they certainly don't love their fellow man enough to view him as anything but a pawn, a means to an end. I mean, these are the kind of people who operate gas chambers by rote.
Well, yes, I fit the right profile as a white man. That's why I've said that the name Dreyfus comes to mind when I think about this.
And this is just one reason, Michael, why I wish you Godspeed with your lawsuit. Because look, let's understand what's been happening for the last decade and a half. The hate speech tyrants have spent years, years using the perpetual motion machine of bureaucracy to persecute people without the means or will to fight back. And even when the Smiths of the world meet resistance, usually the best their victims can hope for is Pyrrhic victory. And I'll give you an example. Just take the case of Canadian journalist Ezra Levant. Now, the audience may not know that name, but he used to be the publisher of the Canadian magazine, The Western Standard, and he was targeted in 2006 by the Alberta Human Rights Commission after republishing those controversial Danish cartoons of Mohammed. Most of us probably remember those cartoons. One of them featured an image of Mohammed with a bomb in his turban. But anyway, here's the Pyrrhic victory I'm talking about. Levant won his case, but he had to endure an emotionally draining 2-year investigation and spend $100,000 on legal fees. And as he said, the process is the punishment. It's a go fight city hall kind of thing. So, Michael, we should all hope that you give the unthinking thought police a taste of their own medicine.
Well, not only that, as I said, I'm the canary in the mine. The thought police wouldn't stop after airbrushing me from the political scene. It would be soon to appear at a theater near you, believe me, meaning you're next.
There's no doubt about that, Michael. People like you, like Levant, stand in the vanguard. But there's something else we should realize. What is this really all about? Well, the ultimate goal of the thought police's minions in government, Hollywood, the media, academia, and various homosexual and Muslim advocacy groups is not to restrict us to our own borders. It is to restrict us within them. And with every victory, their iron burqa descends ever lower over those who speak truth. And look, if the powerful in the media can be silenced, the rest of us won't stand a chance. Michael, thank you for having me on the Savage Nation, where there is no phony quota selection, and the only discrimination is in favor of truth and against lies. And God bless you and your audience.
Thanks, Selwyn. Good work.
Savage.
We have talked about the government's plan of socializing our medical systems. Not only would the costs be astronomical, but our health care would be at the mercy of our federal government. Joining us today to give us some medical insight on this is Dr. Peter Breggin.
Socialized medicine inevitably leads to cost cutting. The government will withhold treatment from older Americans. Government rationing will push them toward a quicker, less expensive death. At Obama's recent health care promotion on ABC, he was asked a question by Jane Sturm, whose mother, at the age of 100, was referred to a specialist for a pacemaker. The first cardiac specialist nixed the idea on the grounds of age, but another specialist appreciated her joy of life and gave her a pacemaker. Now, more than 5 years later, Mom is still enjoying life. After telling her heartwarming story, Jane asked Obama a critical question. Quote, outside the medical criteria for prolonging life for somebody who is elderly, is there any consideration that can be given for a certain spirit, a certain joy of living, a quality of life, or is it just a medical cutoff at a certain age? Before I give Obama's answer, I want to tell you what he didn't say in response. Obama's omissions often tell us more than his utterances. He didn't say, yes, Jane, isn't America a wonderful country with a wonderful healthcare system? He didn't say, Jane, that's a great story. My best to your spirited mother. He didn't say, your mom is lucky to have a daughter like you, Jane, supporting her healthcare. I hope other families will do the same.
We've heard bits and pieces of Obama's response, but what did he really say?
Gladly, Michael. Here's the totality of President Obama's response. Quoting him, "We are not going to solve every difficult problem in terms of end-of-life care. A lot of that is going to have to be we, as a culture and as a society, starting to make better decisions within our families and for ourselves. But what we can do is make sure that at least some of the waste that exists in the system that's not making anybody's mom better, that is loading up on additional tests or additional drugs that the evidence shows is not necessarily going to improve care, that at least then we can let doctors know and your mom know, you know what, maybe this isn't going to help. Maybe you're better off not having the surgery, but taking the painkiller." To begin with, if you think Obama's health care program is merely about expanding insurance coverage, think again. Consistent with the contents of the actual legislation, he's talking about using his health care initiative to control our lives from cradle to grave. He even has personal opinions about your mom and how long she should live. He wants the government to, quote, "let doctors know and let your mom know," end quote, what's appropriate medical care. When the government lets you know something, it's not usually in the form of a circulating family Christmas card. It's more in the form of, this is how it's going to be or else. So after saying nothing positive to Jane and her mother, Obama tells Jane, in effect, that in the future the government will indeed have something more to say to her and her mother, and it won't be, God bless Mom, her zest, and her longevity. It will be about withholding vital health care, and in effect, killing Mom to save money. If you think that cutting off treatment isn't murder, then imagine forcibly taking away the insulin syringe from a friend who's in a diabetic crisis. Or think about Jane's mom, who couldn't have survived without proper cardiac treatment. Obama's so-called end-of-life care decisions are a euphemism for euthanasia, which is itself a euphemism for murder. The institutionalization of medical murder is one potentially horrific result of socialized medicine.
What do you make of Obama's plans on pain medication instead of vital treatment?
As a physician, I can tell you that painkillers such as morphine or Demerol are sometimes used not only to ease pain, but secondarily to shorten the agony by suppressing already failing vital functions. These are decisions that are sometimes made privately between a caring family and doctor when an elderly, terminally ill patient is too impaired to know or to feel anything but the pain and only has hours or a few days to live. But it's not a decision that Obama or the government should be making for anyone else, let alone someone with years of life ahead of them. Take care of your own mother, Mr. President. Hurry her out of this world if you wish, but leave our mom alone. That brings me again to the weekly refrain of my radio report, what I call the primary principles. Protect freedom, take responsibility at all times, express gratitude for your gifts and opportunities, become a source of love. This is psychiatrist Peter Bregan urging you to live like an American. You can listen to all of my radio reports and download the transcripts at www.bregan.com. That's BREGGIN.com.
Thanks, Dr. Bregan. I think people are finally starting to realize just how bad socialized medicine would be for America. Well, now in the middle of all this euphoria over Bill Clinton getting the prisoners released to North Korea, the two journalists, let's not forget that there was another member of the Clinton cabal, Madeleine Halfbright, who also traveled to North Korea. She went over there in 2000. She ignored Kim Jong-il's crimes against humanity when he killed a million people. And she came back with only glowing words about him.
It wasn't until Kim Dae-jung went and said that he had some very important discussions with him and found him to be somebody that he could talk to that was rational, pragmatic. I found the same thing.
She said he was rational and pragmatic. Forget the millions that starved under his leadership, the slave labor camps. Listen to this fool exude sympathy for Kim Jong-il in this clip.
It has been 6 years since his father has died. He is in charge of what is called kind of a hermit kingdom. And he listened very carefully. He didn't lecture me. I went through all my talking points with him, and he gave rational answers, and he seems pragmatic.
But here's the best one. Guess which cable network the dear leader watches. Take a wild guess.
He also told me he had three computers in his office, watches a different television network, and stays informed. He says that he reads.
Was he watching CNN?
CNN. Mm-hmm. Said he did. And I did find him informed.
You hear that? He was informed. He was so intelligent. That's the kind of international diplomacy the Clintons engage in. Chamberlain diplomacy. I, Michael Savage, will be right back.
Savage.
I was watching a there's a couple of channels I'm addicted to on television. I admit I watch my I'm going blind from the internet and television. It's sad. I'm addicted. I can't stop it. But that's the way it is. It's horrible. Everything's blurry. And then I watch military history almost incessantly, and I watch History Channel almost incessantly. And last night on HDTV, I was bored. I watched a thing on the occult in the Third Reich under Hitler, that, you know, it's alleged that Hitler was a Christian, and, excuse me, his henchmen were Christians, but you well know, and I well know, that they weren't. They had been born, of course, in Catholic nations or such, but they were all devout occultists, and they practiced the occult behind the scenes. Most Germans did not know that they were led by an occult maniac, Adolf Hitler, and were surrounded by Satanists. And to this day, they don't understand that they were surrounded by Satanists, nor do the American people themselves understand what was going on historically, because they don't teach any of this. They don't understand that most of the atrocities, not all of them, were carried out by the SS, who answered only to Hitler, separate from the Wehrmacht, which does not mean there were not atrocities conducted by the Wehrmacht, the German army, but it's important for you to understand this, to understand what was going on. These children were brainwashed in a Hitler youth from childhood on. Think about it. If a boy was born in 1920, he then fought in 1938, 1939, 1940. The state had him for virtually his entire developmental life. They brainwashed the child, first in the Hitler youth, and then in another a program for the teenagers, then finally into the military itself. When I heard that Obama wanted to create a military unit or a special unit of children, a national service children, that will answer only to the White House, every nerve in my body went into overdrive. Do you remember that statement? Listen to it now if you don't. This was during the campaign. Guys, see if you can find that. It's very important for you to hear this. I can just say when you have it, whatever. I know I picked it out of the air. I don't expect you to have him. Listen to this, because this could be coming to a neighborhood near you. If you don't have it, you don't have it. But say you have it or don't, you're leaving me in the lurch here. Another 50 minutes, all right. Figure around 9 o'clock tonight I'll have it when I need it, when I'm passed out from exhaustion. Anyway, during the campaign, Obama gave himself away in many different ways. Reverend Wright was perhaps the most telling giveaway of who Obama is inside the head, between the ears, where it counts. You say it doesn't matter that a man sat in a church for 20 years and listened to vile anti-Americanism with a special twist of anti-whiteism? You say it doesn't matter? I say it does matter. I say he could have left at any time, and he didn't. And I warned you what was coming. And he also gave this speech. I want you to hear it again. Go ahead.
We cannot continue to rely only on our military in order to achieve the national security objectives that we've set. We've got to have a civilian national security force that's just as powerful, just as strong, just as well-funded.
A civilian national security force that's just as strong, just as well-funded as the U.S. military. That sounds like a little gentleman from Austria who wanted his own civilian security force, and he created it. It was called the Brown Shirts. And he funded it. And they fought for him, and they protected him. And they protected him not only from the political opponents, but from the military itself. And so, ladies and gentlemen, as I say, since this is the new way, since this is the new world order, since there's no stopping the tidal wave of lies, deceit, arrogance, and absolute un-Americanism emanating from the highest office, I think that it's time to get along and go along. And because the last thing we would want is to see me on a watch list of the Homeland Security or the FBI or the CIA. I want them to understand that I'm a team player, that I'm not a loose cannon, that I'll get along and I'll go along. And so, as I say, whatever the government wants of me, I'm willing to do. And I'm even willing to go so far as to myself offer several initiatives, and one of them would be this. Although over the years I've called for stronger borders and the deportation of illegal aliens, I think today I'm going to call for the relocation of all white people who have lived here for more than 50 years in order to give the newcomers from the South a chance, just for the sake of fairness and balance. We should force all whites over the age of 50 to leave the country, perhaps with their possessions, perhaps not, in order to give all of these newcomers from the South a chance, the newcomers who have put all the Democrats in power and have kept them there for these last 20 years. You see what I mean? It's time for them to appreciate the beauties of America, and it's time for those who've enjoyed this fair nation to move on. Time to pack up your kit bag and move along. Now it's time for the callers on the Savage Nation, 1-800-449-8255, Michael Savage. A newspaper that's losing $1.5 million a week, a million and a half a week. It's not their money. They certainly won't change their policies. They'd rather be out of business collecting crazy checks in the cafes of San Francisco than ever recognize the fact that they drove their newspaper to bankruptcy. So there's an article about bedbugs in San Francisco. Apparently there's a bedbug epidemic in the city, and it's not just limited to single-room occupancy hotels anymore. Oh, no, it's in various neighborhoods now. It's way out of the cheap, poor neighborhoods. The bedbugs have proliferated throughout San Francisco, but there's no mention of where they came from. It's as though the bedbugs were created by spontaneous creation. You've heard of spontaneous emission, and, of course, you've heard of spontaneous combustion, but you've not heard of spontaneous creation yet. But according to the liberal, bedbugs may have been created by spontaneous creation, created simply out of the air in order to make immigrants look bad. There's a lot of news. There's no news. It's the best of times. It's the worst of times. You know, we could talk about news. We could talk not about the news. We could talk about Chinese food, Italian food. I'd say Irish food, but there is none. I'm joking. Don't get mad. I've been enough Irish bars to tell you that they're not known for that, okay? Let's not get angry now all of a sudden. Don't bring up anger now. Start telling me dishes with lamb, okay? Chicago, Tom, welcome to the Savage Nation.
Yeah, Michael, I wanted to know what health benefits, if any, are provided by the squid ink and squid ink pasta.
I give you the philosophy of 1,000 years of evolution. Don't seek excitement, seek fulfillment. And I get a question about squid ink. All right, that's the nature of the business I'm in. Wait, I will refer to the Bible, Deuteronomy 27:12. If a caller asketh thou about squiddeth ink after thou hast given thy heart and thy mind, tell him to shove it! I know, you don't actually find that in Deuteronomy. You will not actually find it. I don't think they deal with squid. I think it's one of the banned foods. Thou shalt not suffer a sorceress to live. I don't want to go into that. There's too many people in San Francisco. Everything that thou shalt not do, they do. And in Emenclaw, Washington, don't even ask. Wow. In Emenclaw, they actually look at Exodus 22 and do everything they're told not to do. A sorceress, a beast. He that lieth with a beast. They love the beasts up in Emenclaw, Washington. In fact, they get them from rescue centers in order to lieth with them. It's horrible. An eye for an eye. You got to look those things up, an eye for an eye. Thou shalt not cover. I don't want to read the Bible. Leave me alone. I'm tired of religious now. I'm off religion. I think I'm giving up on the whole religious thing for a while. I am so jaundiced on religion and religious. I know you're going to be disappointed, but I'm not doing. I'm taking the whole summer off from it. I don't like fanaticism in any religion. I don't like it. We talk about radical Islam. How about radical everything else? You know, I know that the radical Christians don't kill and this and that today, but, you know, to me, the fanatics in religion, worry me greatly, just as the fanatics in government worry me greatly. I don't like fanaticism. So I'll say, well, you're a fanatic because you believe in borders, language, culture. All right, so you define your enemy as a fanatic, whatever you want to say. I just don't, I'm not into this whole religious thing. I think it's a racket. This organized religion bothers me. Sure, I believe in God. I'm going to give me the litmus test. First of all, it's my business whether I do or not, but I do. Why? Because I'm afraid that if I gamble wrongly, I'll be cast into you know where for eternity. So I have that basic, let us say, primal or childish view of the world. If you're braver than me and you don't care what happens to you after you die, all right, whatever. I was raised another way, and that's the end of the story. That's how I shall be. I'm pretty sure there's a creator. But truthfully, I can get closer to God through an elephant and through a gorilla and giving to the gorilla fund and the elephant fund and seeing that anyone who poaches a gorilla and cuts his hand off. I mean, I gave money to a group that hires a military hands of a mountain gorilla because they should. And then the ones who cut the tusks off elephants are the wonderful, sensitive, kindly Asians in North Korea. So I made up a statement. He who saves a single elephant, it is as though he has saved the entire herd. Mark it down. It's a takeoff on the Maimonides thing. He who saves a single life, it is as though he saved the entire world, which is true. But at this point, I'd rather save an elephant. I have more faith now in the elephants and the gorillas than I do in human beings. I'm sick of it. I'm sick of the racket. I'm sick of the red and the black. You know, I read it years ago, the whole red and the black thing, where the only way to get ahead in Napoleonic France was, remember Stendhal's great book? I think it was Stendhal, wasn't it? The Red and the Black. French writer, the book was called The Red and the Black, and it was about a young man who's ambitious in France, and he's trying to look ahead in his life, and how does he get ahead? There's only two ways to get ahead in Napoleonic France, either through the red or the black, either wearing the red of the uniform or the black of the priesthood. And it's about this aggressive individual who's, you know, ambitious. And he has to choose either the red or the black. Nothing's changed here, and in some ways, I mean, it's not the military's not going to give you any great, let us say, external rewards in our country. The people who are committed in the military are truly patriotic and truly do it for their own satisfaction. They don't do it for any societal rewards. It's the same with the police. All right, some do it for the pension, or most do. But the fact of the matter is there's an awful lot of cops and military do it for the honor of defending the nation. But now go to the priesthood. Or the rabbinate, or any one of those areas. What do you think? They're in it for God?
Savage.